Hello and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway, this podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And we are about to look into the future. John will hate that line passionately. We'll understand why later. But today we are looking all the way into the China future. Yes, we've just recently come back from China and we found in China the wonderful Elliot Rich has bumped into him in Hall B3, I think it was, which was quite amazing. Elliot, welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, it was delightful to bump into you because we didn't plan on meet. I didn't know you were there. You didn't know I was there. And to meet you in that vast, vast venue was incredible, really. But yeah, it's good to chat.
It was serendipity.
It's never been quite so nice because, you know, I feel very warm and glowing now that somebody was actually happy to see me.
Oh, it makes a change.
Well, Elliot, listen, before we go too much further, there might be the occasional person that doesn't know you from Fully Charged, maybe, but just tell the audience who you are and where you're from and why you're there.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Elliot Richards. I've been living in China for almost 20 years now. I've been producing content for the Fully Charged and now Everything Electric shows. So we've got our own channel called Everything Electric APAC, where we record China-specific content. But we've been producing content about China for about 8 years now. Chinese electric cars, factories, solar panels, batteries, the whole lot. And so the motor show like a couple of weeks ago was a real highlight of the year for me, where we get to meet everyone again and see what's going on in the China car market. So yeah, this is my bread and butter.
So you rapidly moved on from, I went to China 20 years ago. What took you to China initially? Why? Was there a woman involved?
No. It was work. I graduated in 2008, just before the big recession. And I was a junior architect. And as a junior architect, no one was giving out jobs for junior designers because they're like, we've got to cut back. The first ones are going to cut back are the junior designers. So I went into a market that basically couldn't take me. So I thought, oh, I'll go to China for 3 months, get some experience because things are booming. It's just had the Olympics. So I should have lots of opportunity. I stayed for 3 months and then 6 months and then a year. And now here we are 20 years later and I still haven't gone back to university. So, yeah.
Wow. So it was pure chance. You didn't say, oh, I'm fascinated by the culture, society, how it operates, communism, none of that stuff. It was just, oh, fancy that for 3 months and the rest is history.
Yeah, just I think I wanted a change of scene. I thought, well, China kind of could be interesting for 3 months and then yeah, and that, you know, that's what happens. And now I've got a wife and three kids here, and yeah, so it's all, my whole life's changed from coming here in many, many ways. So it's been an adventure.
Yeah, you're not kidding, Paul. As newbies to China, you and I went and we had a culture shock, I think it's fair to say. Elliot, we have our own personal things that made us go, whoa, this is just so different. What struck you about your first few days, weeks in China?
So it was back in 2008. Gosh, it was so difficult to do anything. It was difficult to communicate, obviously. There were no apps. There were no super apps. There was no, you know, smartphones back then, or very few smartphones. And so you had to communicate, you know, human to human, and I didn't speak any Chinese, so that was very difficult. And then it was very much like the Wild West. It, a lot of building work, a lot of construction, you know, new metro lines, new bullet train lines, so there's construction work everywhere. So it was very overwhelming with the noise, the smells, and at the time we didn't know the pollution as well. So for me, it was a feeling of, oh my god, what have I done? I can't wait to go home. But yeah, that didn't last very long. Then you get swept up in it and then you get involved and you're like, oh, this is really exciting. This is fun. I couldn't possibly go home because it seems quite boring now. And yeah, that feeling hasn't really gone away.
But I think that was the thing that struck us. I mean, we landed and look, there's a lot of noise outside of China about China. you know, it's very restrictive, it's an oppressive regime, all of these sorts of things that, quite frankly, were just absent from what we saw. And maybe that's by design, or maybe that's just the reality. It looked like the reality. And the minute we walked in, so we kind of got through the airport, we got the taxi, we managed to navigate that for the first time. We couldn't get Didi, which is the sort of Uber of China, but we had to sort of queue, and we got a taxi assigned, and we thought, oh gosh, going to get our leg lifted here. And 15 quid later, you know, we'd got three of us from the airport to the hotel, which was the other side of it wasn't actually that far. It was only about 10 kilometers. But anything out of the airport, I mean, you get out of Heathrow and you go to Hatton Cross, it cost you 27 quid. And it's like, what? So we arrived at the hotel, which, relief, we could see the area that we're supposed to be. Google Maps doesn't work there, by the way. And it was just this sense of relief. And as we got round the show and as we began to get into it, everything was easier than we were expecting. You know, people were, trying to be helpful and kind of got into the show. And it was just... And I guess by the end of the time that we had in China, which was only 10 days... You know, it was like, I don't want to go home. I was like that. It was like, we'd done Tiananmen Square, we'd been up the Great Wall, we had a good walk around central Beijing. And you know, to your point, if you went there as an architect, my gosh, the architecture of all of the different buildings are quite outstanding. Did you do much architecting for your early career?
Yeah, so I did a year in architecture in Beijing for a small studio. We worked on an artist's compound, and then we worked on a big gymnasium in Dalian, which is another city. I think both of them got built, but I left after a while because I didn't really fancy it. I fancied doing something different. So, and back then it was growing so quickly, so fast that, you know, there's endless possibilities. You could go to China and do anything, be anyone you wanted. And yeah, it was a really exciting time. It's less so now. Obviously the realities of the global economic situation, I think, are hitting everyone. But back then it was fun. Definitely a lot of fun.
A lot funner. Oh, you're welcome here, because that's what we are. We're funner. I think we even say it there. Like, it's funner on our mugs. But anyway, when did sort of let's call them the Chinese name for them, new energy vehicles, come on your radar, and why did you get involved?
Yeah. So I mean, the first. I mean, they came on the scene, I guess, officially in about 2015, which is when China developed its next 10-year industrial strategy, which is the Made in China 2025 strategy. Now, that came on board, but we didn't really see the efforts of that until about 2017, 2018. And that's when you started noticing in Shanghai more electric cars around. There were a lot of like pilot projects with the government who were letting people rent them for, I don't know, 50p an hour or something ridiculous. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I should try that. And then I went to Shenzhen, and all of the taxis there were electric in, I think, 2016. I had a trip there. I thought, I got in my first electric car, which was a BYD taxi in Shenzhen. I thought, oh, wow, this is different. This is really nice. And that kind of piqued my interest. And then I started making content about 2018 because I thought, you know, no one's talking about these Chinese EVs, but they're really good. They're affordable. They're fairly ubiquitous here in China. That's back in 2018. I thought, oh, there's a gap here. I might as well just tell other people what's going on in China. Fast forward, 8 years later, and it's, you know, you can't turn without someone talking about Chinese EVs somewhere. And that's just been in 8 years. And now we're talking about, you know, legacy automakers struggling so much against these new giants of the space, right? So to see it happen so quickly has been fascinating, like unbelievable. But back in 2018, you saw, oh, it's a kind of a nice project, a few cars will go electric, but you know, it won't go much further.
We commented as we walked into the arena for Auto China, we were just struck by the lack of noise. The air quality wasn't such an issue for us in Beijing, but the fact that you had tens of thousands of vehicles moving past you every 5 or 10 minutes, but there was almost nothing other than the road noise from tyres, just really hit us. That's the almost the unspoken about benefit that you get from EVs, you know, that it's just a much more pleasant place to be. Have you seen that as a very stark change, or because you've been immersed in it, it's kind of just been gradual and it's just become the way of life?
This is so strange. So everyone I talk to who's been out to China in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, they all say the same thing. They say, why is it so quiet? Why is it so quiet? Is something wrong? Has something happened? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, nothing's happened. It's a normal day. And it's not until I go home, you know, to the UK that, you know, I'm walking along a street somewhere and it's noisy, but it's the smell. Like, in a, if you go to like a built up area, anywhere in the country, there's this lingering smell of petrol, right? Burn petrol or diesel. And I didn't realize until I went back to UK how much of a stark difference it was. And it's only when people come out here and tell me that it's very noticeable that you think, it is actually quite a big difference, because it was exceptionally noisy 6 or 7 years ago. Traffic noise, not just the engine noise, but honking as well. So I think 5 years ago they now find people for honking. So that completely stopped the honking. I remember a story that BMW said they had to have a specific horn for China because they were used so much they wore out like 10 years ago. So they had like all the legacy brands used to have like industrial strength horns because they were used so much in China. It's just showed you how much honking noises there were. Now they just don't do it because there's noise cameras and you will get a fine, which obviously goes straight through to your bank account, or, you know, immediately. So I think that makes a big difference as well. But yeah, I haven't noticed it until I went home.
So one of the things that we noticed very quickly was that on almost every gantry, there's a camera for something, you know, and it flashes like almost constantly. So not for speeding per se, but for whatever reason it's there. You say there's noise cameras?
Yeah, so they've got like these AI, I don't know, everyone says AI, but those cameras that can detect. So if you honk your horn, this noise camera can detect where that sharp noise has come from and pinpoint it to your car. It says, right, this is a honking zone. You've honked in this zone. You're getting the fine.
Wow.
So yeah, it's the biggest change. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, China's famous for technological innovation, but I went quite that far. What's the favorite thing? It's very hard because there's so much happening all of the time. But what was the most standout thing that you've seen, say, in the last, you know, since you started doing this? What was that moment where you just kind of went, wow, this changes the dial a bit?
It's probably not one thing. It's probably a couple of things that kind of amalgamated together. I would say both those would be in Shenzhen. So we did two videos, I think, back in 2021 when I was relatively new to fully charged or everything electric. First one was around Shenzhen. We visited the company that organized the switch over to electric. So they switched over to electric taxis and electric buses, not overnight, but literally over 1 to 2 months. So 16,000 buses and taxis flip from gas to electric in a couple of months. So they had to build the infrastructure and all of that. And I got to Shenzhen and I saw the project. I thought, wow, this is on another level. If a city like Shenzhen could just flip the switch and do this in 2 months, then why can't everyone else, you know, if they can do it at that scale? So that was one moment. And then the other moment was probably visiting that BYD factory, again, 2021. No one had really heard much about BYD back then. And I don't think even when we visited the factory, we thought it'd be such a big company. But we got into the factory And I thought, yeah, they do things a bit differently here. Like the speed, the scale, the number of models, the openness, like we were received with. This is very different from experiences elsewhere. And for me, I thought, this is probably one company to watch out for. So between those two things, I think the kind of whole BYD story, because the taxis in Shenzhen are BYD and a lot of the buses are, that whole BYD story is kind of the turning point for me.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
So I was lucky enough to be the Scottish government person who brought BYD to the UK way back in 2011 when we got buses into Falkirk, Alexander Dennis, and started to manufacture BYD buses or assemble them and then went on to manufacture them. BYD are a global phenomenon, and part of that is down to the state subsidy that they are able to attract and huge amounts of money to support their commercial efforts. Do you see that more broadly across all of the Chinese manufacturers, or is it just channeled towards BYD?
This is a very difficult question to answer. So, I mean, auto manufacturers will have government support. Whether what that is, we don't really know, but we know that, for example, NIO, for example, will have investment from the local government because they built the factory there. So whether that support means that they get paid per vehicle, I don't think so, or maybe it's, who knows what it is, and it's all a bit opaque, so we won't always know. But there's no real state-sponsored subsidy program that we know about to subsidize these companies, but there's a lot of support from the government in order to increase kind of domestic manufacturing. So whether that's, you know, tax breaks for setting up a battery factory in rural China, or that's how it works. But I wouldn't say they were getting money per vehicle sold. There's nothing like that, but there's support from the government in other ways. BYD isn't a special case. BYD is a private company, but obviously with state support. The state-owned manufacturers, they will have state support more heavily, so that your Chang'ans, your SAICs, they're more government supported. But the BYD is no special case. Every auto manufacturer will have similar kind of benefits.
And the one thing, Elliot, I hadn't appreciated was that with BYD, Geely, they are the not only a brand in their own right, but they are the umbrella for a family of different manufacturers that appeal to different segments. Can you talk to us about the complex nature of the marketplace in China?
Why have you asked me all the difficult questions? Trying to unpick like Geely's subsidiaries and all of that will take me about 6 hours. no one really understands, to be honest. I mean, there's flow charts on the internet. Like, even AI would get confused with that question. To try to explain it in a nice soundbite. So essentially what the automakers have done is they're trying to capture every segment. So brands like, Geely or BYD have started off with capturing like the mid-range segment. For example, we do sedans, which are affordable. We do petrol and we do electric. But then they saw opportunity to compete with the Germans. So we're going to do powerful sedans. We're going to do SUVs. Then they thought, well, we can also compete with, the Japanese and doing really small, like K-car kind of cars as well. And so they're just trying to branch out into all segments. And then they will start exporting those different segments to different countries. So you look at SAIC, they've got their IM brand, their premium brand. They've got MG, which is very successful in the UK and Europe. And so different segments have different levels of success in different places. Geely being one very specific example. So that Volvo, Polestar, very big success overseas, less so in China, but it means they can sell more overseas. And then they've got brands in China like Maple, which very few people have heard of. That's their ride-sharing brand, which is very, very cheap electric cars, pretty ugly, built to a price, which will never sell to anyone. And it's like they're just trying to get into every segment everywhere and dominate, basically take more market share. The more market share you have, the more cars you sell, the more profit you make, the more successful you are. That's simply, it's just simple economics.
And oh gosh, there's so many questions flying around in my head that I know that we would talk for hours about. And because, you know, you sort of think economics, this is a communist country. That's not supposed to be capitalism. I mean, it's almost like China have gone, you guys think you know capitalism, let us show you how it's done. And they are doing it. And yet the general feeling of everybody around the place, there was a lot of positivity, just so much across the board. I was just so surprised by it. But this is a strategy that is being executed extremely well. If you go back to you mentioned the 2015,
made in China,
next 10 years strategy. Yeah, made in China strategy. I mean, amazing to take the very thing that we go, we turn something over, made in China, it better be rubbish, you know. But they went, made in China. Now you will know. And 10 years later on, we certainly do know. They have taken the market by storm. The one thing, I mean, there was a bit of a gap for me, you know where we're going here now, at the show, in that there wasn't tons of vans there. Now, there was a few. But mostly they were autonomous, interestingly, which is another thing that we can come on to. But the commercial vehicle bit was more really out there in the future. And, you know, when I looked at NIO and CATL's battery swap technology, when I looked at the flash charging from BYD, you know, sub 4 minutes for, or sub 5 minutes for massive 10 to 80% charging. The sub 4 minute for CATL charging. And the last one that really, you know, blew my melon, twisted my Swede, was autonomous charging from Li. And they would park the vehicle by the person's house at night, and then it would go to their charging station, which would autonomously plug the vehicle in and charge it at 500 plus kilowatts. You know, thank you very much. All of this stuff was really valuable in the van sector. Now, it's cheap enough, I think, to get into the van sector because everything was relatively cheap there. Talk to me about what you've seen, because you'll have seen in BYD that they've got the commercial vehicle sector, Changan, similar, Chery, similar, Foton, similar. Foton had a big sign, big poster. I don't know if you saw it. Commercial vehicles, come see us in E4. There's nothing in here. I looked everywhere and under everything. Tell us about commercial vehicles.
I mean, specifically with the auto shows, this is now the global event for everyone, right? It's the biggest auto show in the world. And I think given the value of the space there, they want to show off their commercial vehicles because those are, I think those are the ones which look better in press photos, or if they've got influencers there, you know, that's kind of the market they're selling to, which is why they haven't focused so much on the commercial vehicles. Commercial vehicles are insanely big here. You know, it's delivery in China is on another level because everything is done online. So all shopping is done online. Thousands, millions of packages every day get sent across China, and China's a big place. So it's just not seen as sexy enough for the auto show. But what is happening is that all of the brands are involved in that space because the money to be made is from the commercial sector. Passenger vehicles are extremely expensive to make and very razor thin profit margins because of the price wars here, but the commercial vehicle sector is a bit more protected from that. But so we've seen like small vans now, like the smaller van sector, that's almost completely dominated by electric now. Very difficult to find any petrol or and no diesel ones. We are starting to see methanol trucks a lot more, but then that's also beginning to pivot a lot more into electric trucks. If you go to Shenzhen, almost all the trucks there now you see are battery trucks, and so battery dump trucks, battery cement trucks. They're all big, huge trucks. So they're all working on it, but they're just not really shouting about it as much as the passenger vehicles. But every single brand is intensely focused in that area. But you just have to, you really have to get in there and start digging it out yourself, because they're not going to show it to you otherwise.
Is there one that's standing out for you? So if I was to come to you, make a phone call. Elliot, tell me, which manufacturer should I go and visit to rattle their cage on commercial vehicles? Who's the one with the biggest footprint opportunity? Have we already seen them here in the UK, or are they yet to be seen? What do you think?
Be very sure that whoever you say, he's going to be on the phone within 20 minutes of this finishing to organise an appointment.
So there's two companies I would look at straight away. So BYD and Geely with Verizon and their other brands, like other commercial brands. BYD, because they've been doing it for one of the longest. They have factories in America, even, to sell BYD, buses. And whenever you go to their headquarters, they always have their buses, their 7.5-ton trucks, their vans, all out for display if you go to their headquarters. And obviously, they're well-known, so the brand is well-known. They're well-known with their buses. They're well-established, basically, for one of the Chinese automakers in terms of commercial vehicles. And the other is Geely with Verizon, because they're doing more interesting things. Again, their footprint is quite big. They've been pushing their Verizon brand with their big trucks, their vans, and you see them around everywhere here in China. So I'd say look at those two as your first port of call. But then I would also not discount, the big state-run automakers, so like JAC and Dongfeng, because they are the ones who really produce the trucks, like the big trucks on the roads. If they can electrify that fleet fastest, they will be the most commercially successful. Just no one has done it yet. You go outside of Shanghai and on the highway, still most of them are still diesel. We haven't really seen much in the way of long distance electric trucks yet.
And so just follow up question, did you see the partnership that has gone international with JMC and Ford? So Jianlang Motor Corporation and Ford, because I mean, they announced it here in the UK about 3 weeks before, 2 weeks before the commercial vehicle show, and then surprised us all with an actual vehicle. And it's so Chinese. It is definitely a Chinese vehicle. Straight away, from if you know anything about Chinese vehicles, the design cues, the way, the layout of the cab, the squareness, even down to the flooring, it was all kind of, yeah, this has come from China. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but in the commercial vehicle world, they have a particular way, almost kind of like the cars did 10 years ago. There's a sort of a sense of IDing the vehicle as Chinese, but it doesn't mean to say quality is poor. It doesn't mean to say anything. But did you see that sort of American-China partnership coming into Europe and the wider world? Not America at the moment, they say. But
sorry, was your question, do I see more of those partnerships?
Did you see it coming? Did you see that kind of partnership coming between, a major automaker legacy and
absolutely
a China manufacturer?
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
You did?
I mean, not that specific one, but we've
sure,
been...
Sure, but somebody was going to do it.
Yeah, so we've been seeing rumblings over the last couple of years. So, for example, VW have now used XPeng chassis and tech within their car to... VW is essentially just applying their design on top. So that's been produced. We just saw the news that car is likely to come to Europe So this is an XPeng chassis, XPeng battery, XPeng software, but VW body. And we're seeing that a lot more. And I think within the next couple of years, we'll probably see a couple more legacy brands being taken over fully by Chinese brands, or more partnerships. So Leapmotor and Stellantis being, you know, one big one. Because the development cycle in China is a quarter of the time. So you can come up with an idea and have it on in the market within a year or 18 months. Whereas a legacy manufacturer takes 4 or 5 years. I'm not saying that's the right way to do the right way to do things, because, you know, you can only simulate so many tests using a computer. You need to do some real world testing. But yeah, absolutely. I think because the Chinese have stolen such a march in terms of hardware and software, that the legacy OEMs just simply can't catch up. You're going to see a lot more partnerships, especially with the German automakers, in the next couple of years. It's inevitable.
Yeah, there have been rumours of BYD buying a Volkswagen factory, which has been decommissioned, shall we say, to get their footprint into Europe, made in Germany, and then off it goes into the European market. We noticed something very, very obvious about the different structures that we have in the UK and in Europe against China, in that in Europe, we do things piecemeal. And so we'll have one manufacturer make a bit of the car, we'll have somebody else make a bit of the charging infrastructure, somebody else make a bit of the software and the chips and so on. In China, there's vertical integration. BYD own every single nut and bolt of the vehicle, from design through to getting it on the road, charging it, the operation, the silicon chips, everything is owned. And what that means for me as a driver is that if I'm in China and I buy a BYD, I use a BYD charger, the car and the charger speak the same language, operate at optimum level, and I get the best experience. To me, it seems like the most efficient model possible as a driver and as a business person. And then the clever bit is we'll sell all our technology to the legacy manufacturers who haven't got a Scooby-Doo what to do, and we'll just stick our hat and our coat on it, and it becomes a BMW. That's clever. I mean, it's world domination stuff, isn't it? We're not overstating this. I worried that I was being a bit sycophantic when I was there about the Chinese and how bloody good they are. But the reality is they've really got it switched on.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost say it's too late for any of the legacy brands to even compare to what the Chinese brands are doing. It's now inevitable that you're going to be buying like a BMW with BYD tech inside, for example, or whatever, whoever it might be, who knows, right? Or, you know, you can now plug into the BYD charging infrastructure, or there'll be a consortium of Chinese manufacturers who come together and say, right, we're now the Chinese consortium, we're going to build charging infrastructure in the UK that has flash charging. If you have a Chinese car, you can use it for half the price. You know, there's many ways they can do it. But yeah, the legacy automakers have just been too slow, way too slow.
Yeah. It does feel that they have, and it feels that that vertical integration that John was talking about there, it feels like that's the most powerful marketing tool that you can possibly have, you know, if, you know, that people get the whole experience and you know, benefits for plugging in a BYD versus a Geely or a BMW or a VW or whatever. But ultimately all of these things happen on or because of the quality and the speed and longevity of the batteries, right? So, we've heard for years and years the batteries all, one combust spontaneously, you know, because a twig sort of hit it, and all of that sort of nonsense. But also that, you know, you won't go very far. They'll degrade really quickly. They charge really slowly. I mean, from all that you saw and all that you know, just tell us a little bit about batteries small scale, but also this grid scale battery that can support. Because if we all went electric tomorrow, like they did in Shenzhen or wherever it was, that, you know, the grid would fall over. But there is a solution to this. Talk us through that battery journey from the cars all the way up through to the grid scale stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, the most exciting space is the battery space, because companies like CATL and BYD are really kind of the bedrock of all of the other innovations you see about in front of us. Without those two or three companies, none of this other stuff would be possible. So you need to watch what they're doing in order to kind of understand the market. And I think recent announcements have been much more paired towards building grid scale batteries, but for much cheaper. So I think CATL announced their Nextra battery, which is their sodium ion battery. It was essentially half the battery cost, the current battery cost. They won't give me a specific figure, but they say half the battery cost, which means you can have grid scale batteries in your country, which will support, you know, when you have that extra load, if more people get electric cars. But then if you combine that with V2G as well, you now have this huge grid of cars feeding everyone else. And I think that whole kind of infrastructure story for me is the most exciting and interesting part. Not everything's been figured out yet, but I think once we can plug in our cars to the grid and the grid can feed the cars and the cars feed the grid and the battery storage solutions and all of this gets tied in, then it's a no-brainer to make the switch. I don't know if I've really answered your question, but...
Yeah, well, no, I think you have. I think one of the things that I was amazed at was the speed of charge and how that has come on such a long way. I'm not sure what actual cars have that tech in it. I know the BYD, certainly they had their 5-minute flash charging, which is in some of their vehicles, 9 minutes to 97%. Oh, and if it's minus 30, it's an extra 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh dear, I'll stick around then, you know. And this, but that was quite outstanding. And that was obviously demonstrated for us all to see. And then CATL, obviously they didn't put it, well, they had the electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicle, which I think you and Dan recorded in. But it was that story, but then answering the challenge, because everybody go, oh, there's no power. But that was it, the sodium ion batteries, the grid scale batteries. It just, I think there's an ecosystem to John's earlier point around building everything that we need for the new energy vehicle, the ecosystem and everything like that. It's there, isn't it? It's there, ready, and almost just about ready to go in China.
Yeah, and I think once we start seeing this like large scale deployment of the flash charging with BYD, so they said 20,000 of those stations by the end of this year. Once we see that, you know, that's going to increase demand for sodium ion batteries. Then sodium ion batteries will come down in price because it's supported by batteries on site with those flash chargers. And if they can build those for a much cheaper price, then everyone's going to jump on the bandwagon. No one can predict what's going to happen, but every steps that BYD and CATL are making will benefit all of us, you know, whether it's grid scale batteries or cheaper batteries in our cars or faster charging. These are all benefits for the consumer in some ways that we'll notice, though 5-minute charging times, and other ways we won't notice. So, you know, cheaper electricity, for example, when we plug in our computer at home.
Paul mentioned Li. It was a brand that I'd never heard of, but was just intrigued by, with the autonomous nature of charging, and that you get home at the end of your day and the vehicle just takes itself off to the charger. And the way in which it does that is through LiDAR. Now, we're all familiar perhaps with LiDAR from our phones and a little sensor here, which scans the environment and can build a 3D model and show you a picture of what's in front of you. It's quite remarkable stuff, which is now being used in vehicles to scan the highways, scan the roads, to look for problems, issues that there may be, other road users and so on, to build a 3D model, which enables you then to navigate with no hands, no feet on pedals, no eyeballs required, just drives. And Paul and I were lucky enough to see that when we went and looked at RoboTaxi and RoboBus and so on. Brilliant, brilliant pieces of kit, which are being used in small trial areas at the moment. But what we noticed was that LiDAR 3, which requires some input from the driver, and LiDAR 4, which is don't need a driver, are being built into vehicles right now it exists. And I honestly thought that LiDAR and auto-driving autonomous vehicles would never happen in my lifetime. And I've seen them. What potential do the Chinese manufacturers see for this that the rest of the world is missing? Because those little humps on the front of the vehicle are there on pretty much everything you could buy at that show. They must see the world is going to change and drivers will become redundant pretty soon. And for commercial vehicles, that's especially exciting.
Yeah, so spot on. The bucket of gold for the company that managed to expand this overseas in a big way would be one of the wealthiest companies in the world. Obviously, money powers everything, right? But whoever can crack this has a huge potential market. So mostly with commercial vehicles. So, you know, we're already seeing it on small scale with the small kind of last mile delivery, like those small, I don't know what you call them, like little robots on the street. I mean, that's...
Yeah. I think they called them cargo bots, didn't they? And
there you
stuff.
Go. Cargo bots. So, I mean, that's one part of the infrastructure. But yeah, so if you can make taxis autonomous, if you can make commercial vehicles autonomous, then it reduces the cost for the operator. And that really is where they see the most value. The passenger vehicle stuff is yet to be seen. But I foresee that in the future, there'll be only autonomous driving vehicle zones in cities. So for example, you're inside the inner ring road of, I don't know, let's say London, you have to be electric and it has to be autonomous driving for safety, for pollution reasons. But if you go to a place, most places in China now, they're on a 5G connected city. So all of the cars speak to the traffic lights and the traffic lights speak to the cars. They're all on the grid. So they're all managed straight away. So I don't know if you notice when you're in one of the taxis on their screen, it sometimes shows how many seconds are left on the red light.
Yes. Genius.
Yeah. So this is all connected to each other. Almost every traffic light in China now has that capability. So if they know there's too much traffic at a traffic light, they can increase the amount of green time that the traffic goes to the green light. So the whole of China is now connected like this. So if the city is now within this kind of smart grid, then it's only a fairly simple switch to making those vehicles able to operate within that without the driver. Obviously, there's still safety concerns. The thing that's holding it back is regulations and safety. I think the cars are more than capable of doing 100% of the journeys all by themselves. But because there's safety concerns, who takes liability, that the government is taking a bit more of a slower approach on making it better before it goes to the market. But yeah, that is why you probably saw so many autonomous driving companies like Pony AI, Momenta, companies I'd never even heard of before. They had big stands there because they know that this is the next opportunity to make money, should we say.
Yeah, and it was super exciting to see them. Elliot, you were so kind in trying to help us get the app sorted, and it needed all kinds of ID things, and Elliot was just fabulous in trying to help us. But unfortunately, we couldn't get it over the line, and so we couldn't get him. But John managed to snaffle a shot because it seems that when the taxi pulled away from dropping somebody off, it opened all the windows. It would obviously just to get some air around the cab, and I didn't realize it would do that, and it just opened all the windows. And of course John was able to see in and see there was no driver and see the steering wheel happening and stuff like that. So we've managed to capture just a smidgen of footage.
Oh, that's cool.
But it was great to see it. Yeah, it was cool. So we did get something, but I mean, I was stunned by, I think it was a company called CargoBot with a K, that have a 1,000 kilowatt hour battery, takes them 810 kilometers, battery swap at the other end, you know, and then you can just switch it back and go back the other way, you know, and you're just thinking, my goodness, this is, and platooning, like combining almost like a train running down the highway, just amazing.
That's that's already in Shanghai. There's a deep water port. There's a big long bridge which connects Shanghai to this deep water port. And I think it's SAIC have these trucks which don't have any cab for the driver. There's nothing. It's just batteries. and then a truck behind, and they go in a big long string of 9 or 10, and they go all the way to the port. They drop off their load. They go all the way back. They charge. Yeah. And I haven't seen that myself, except in pictures. I think that's incredible. And that's been running for at least 4 or 5 years.
Hey, let's go. Let's go on a commercial vehicle tour of China. Come on, let's do it.
Oh, I'll organize it if you're ready. How about next week?
I'm ready.
I'm feeling like I've been binned off here.
Sorry, John.
Oh, you can come too.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Can I, just a strange one, because, you know, obviously I've got my tiny little YouTube channel, which is growing, you know, I'm happy about that. But you've been able to see some really cool things over the years. And I know that you've just recorded something with Richard Hammond, the hamster, on Neo, which I'm sure was a great treat. He seems like a really down-to-earth, quite grounded guy. I mean, I don't know whether that's true or not, you know, but... What's been your favorite highlights? Because you've had some phenomenally well performing videos, over hundreds of thousands of views. What's been your favorite one to record?
That's a good question. I think my favorite one was these kind of low speed mobility vehicles in a place called Shandong in the middle of China. So they're illegal. Okay, they don't have a license. They don't have insurance. They're now all electric, but they're like these tiny things with maybe one or two or sometimes three or four seats. And they're all made in one area. Everyone drives them around in that area, even though they're illegal. And they're so much fun, but they're tiny and electric, which is great, right? And really affordable. So about £1,000 and you can buy one. And just driving, well, number one, driving around those in a street with no insurance and no license and stuff is great fun.
I'm a criminal.
And then, well, everyone does it, so you kind of jump in with them. And then sure. I just think, you know, all these people have bought these small micro cars and they're not filling up the streets with big SUVs. And for me, it just makes so much more sense. If only we could all kind of, I mean, obviously, if they're a little bit safer and a bit more legal, but if we could all switch over to that kind of model of...
a bit more legal.
That model of transportation, then our cities would be, you know, much better places. So for me, that was a real joy because it was a bit naughty, but also quite fun and quite insightful. Yeah, and that's all that. In China, so...
That was the best answer ever. Wonderful.
What's the one thing, Elliot, just to finish off, what's the one thing, I mean, usually I would ask the question, what's the future hold? But I think we can see the direction of travel is clear and the future will be more of the same, more elsewhere. I'm fascinated to understand, what have we yet to discover? So Paul and I have been to China for 10 days and we've seen a tiny, tiny fraction of what is happening. You're an expert, 20 years in the game. What have we yet to see that will blow our trousers off?
Hydrogen. No, not hydrogen.
I was going to say, whoa!
sorry, I dropped the H-bomb there. the future, yeah, I mean, this is very difficult. But I think for me, the next kind of 5 to 10 years, we're going to see a lot more in the low-altitude flight economy. So this is in China's next 10-year plan. And you know, that's that when they have got that industrial strategy, they're going to execute it. So I think for me, it's going to be that low altitude economy, which is a huge, there's been a huge amount of investment. So at the show, you probably saw at least 3, 4, or 5 eVTOL aircraft. I've seen one flying near Shanghai. It's an incredible sight. And I think there's a lot of use commercially for those. And obviously in kind of rescue situations and things like as in passenger vehicles, maybe it'll take a bit longer. So that is one huge area of interest for me. And then the other one, obviously, is robotics. We're going to see a great... Well, actually, I don't know. I don't know about robotics. I'm still on the fence about that. All of these robots we're seeing are all still pre-programmed. They're saying they're in factories, but they're not really. So that's one to keep an eye on.
But they can dance. They can dance. Oh, we saw them in the streets. Yes, oh, man, they can dance.
But for me, it's still a gimmick. I'm like, nah, not yet. And I think we're going to see, finally going to see solid state batteries. And that will absolutely transform everything that we do. Smaller batteries, lighter batteries, and, you know, with range of 1,000, 2,000 kilometers. I mean, that solves every problem that everyone ever complains about. And if you can get a, you know, graphene battery or solid state battery in your phone, you know, then lasts 2 weeks without needing to charge. So I think that's fundamentally, that's really going to change the game.
If anyone can, China can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And interesting, your earlier points around how Legacy is going to have to partner with, or even you suggested be taken over by that. I mean, that I'm like, wow, I hadn't really put that into a sentence before, but you know, maybe so. But listen, Elliot, we could literally, and we will no doubt do again, talk for hours. I honestly, genuinely feel very privileged to want to have been and to be able to have this conversation with you. I think you've got immense knowledge. You're uniquely positioned. And I know that, you know, recently you've gone into business for yourself. And, you know, this is now your day job, you know, to kind of get people understanding the local Chinese economy, the world of China, and how it can impact their businesses. And I can't think of anybody better placed from a standing start 20 years ago just to grow into this, you know, a real mine of knowledge that can be shared across the world. And it was great to see you at work, you know, with different clients across the show on different days. I'm sure that must have been a really tough gig to constantly be going around the show with new people. Oh, look at this new thing. This new thing again. It was outstanding. And I would highly, highly recommend anybody that happens across this podcast, and we'll put this in the notes as well, and you'll have to give us your website and all that good stuff, but you know, to connect with you, because we've gained so much benefit just from chatting there, but also chatting here. We will be putting a small video out that was taken in the show in the not too distant future, although it'll be coming out across 19 groups sort of channels, I guess. But it was such a privilege, and I know that you are extremely knowledgeable and will give people incredible insight. So, with all of that in mind, we have got something very special for you, because it's what everybody going into new business, a new business venture needs. And it is the EV Cafe magic wand. There it is. And it's going to come across the airways all across the globe. And it's fully Harry Potter'd with a lightning bolt and everything. And you're going to get to wave this magic wand and do your darndest. Right, so here it comes. It's coming across the airwaves. There it goes. It's now in your possession.
Well, thank you. Get it? I've got it.
There you go. Okay, good. Well, there it is.
It's very light.
Fabulous. So, I know. To see, well, it's a China tech, you know, it just takes it to the next level. So, what would you use your one wish for? And you're allowed to wish for clients if you wish. But what would you wish for with your one magic wand wish?
Oh, okay. Wish for anything?
Yeah, anything you like.
Okay. So my wish is that if anyone is unsure about China, I wish you could come and visit, because whether you're interested in tech or EVs or anything, I think visiting a place that's been in the news so much and not always for the right reasons, will open your mind, and to see how people live and work and operate here, I think will be worth its weight in gold. So that's what I wish for everyone to be able to come and do.
Honestly, that is a beautiful wish. And John, I think you'll agree. We had exactly that experience, didn't we?
Mm. Yeah, I think what I love about what Elliot does is that many broadcasters set out with an agenda. and they want to portray China as a threat, as a worry, as a bad place to be. What Eliot does is he brings objectivity to the experience of going to China and experiencing it for yourself. And there is no substitute for that. China is a friendly, clean, wonderful place to visit. And there is no better guide than Eliot Richards.
Come and see it for yourself. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Eliot, listen, is there anything that we've missed or forgotten or not said that you would want to leave us with? Because, it's been a great conversation.
No, I think that's everything. I think my only word is just come to China. That's it. See it for yourself. Yeah.
You're in the south, right? You're in Shanghai.
Yeah, yeah. Just drop me a note when you come back and we can meet up or do whatever you want. So, yeah, all possible.
You can guide me through the menus because that was one of the slight trepidation that we had.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. We can help.
Good stuff. Eliot Richards, you've been an absolute star. We thank you so much. And
thank you very much.
Everybody, you can check out all of Eliot's stuff. You can subscribe to his YouTube channel, which is Fully Charged APAC, basically.
Yeah,
is
Everything that, Electric right? APAC. Yeah, Everything Electric APAC.
Everything Electric, of course, yes. Everything Electric now. Everything Electric APAC, it's an additional channel to the Everything Electric scene. And there's so many fantastic videos on there. You can learn a ton about the wonderful world of China and all the developments there. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. You can find him all over the socials everywhere. So please do. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please do share it with other people. Many people are doubters about China. This, I think, should change your mind. So go ahead and do that. And I guess until next time, have a great day, everyone. And thank you, Eliot and John, for a wonderful chat.